Coming up, the Torah path to health, fitness, and a holy life with Rabbi Alexander Seinfeld. Welcome to 613 Books Podcast. I'm your host, Heather Dean. And if you like to read a variety of books with authentic Jewish values, we read you loud and clear. My guest on this episode of 613 Books Podcast is Rabbi Alexander Seinfeld, co-author of Body and Soul, The Torah Path to Health, Fitness, and a Holy Life. It's a collection of over 180 major Torah teachings, some of which appear in translation for the first time, including Midrash, Talmud, Rambam, Ramban, Ramchal, Rav Yisrael Salanter, Rav Shimshon Raphael Hirsch, Rav Avigdor Miller, Rabbi Menachem Mendel Schneerson, Rav Shlomo Valba, and many others. Rabbi Alexander Seinfeld heads Jewish Spiritual Literacy Incorporated, JSLI, a nonprofit organization dedicated to revitalizing Jewish education. Rabbi Seinfeld has been a Jewish educator for over 20 years, including having taught every grade from 6th to 12th as a participant on an Aish New York 10-day trip to Israel over two decades ago. I will never forget a class given over by Rabbi Seinfeld about gratitude and the Almighty's infinite wisdom. It's so nice to catch up a little since so many years ago. Welcome to 613 Books Podcast, Rabbi Alexander Seinfeld.
It's a pleasure to be here.
You know, there are many genres of books available to Jewish readers, and each of us has our preferences. And I have to tell you, and our listeners, that in my opinion, the book you co-authored with Dr. Daniel Grove, Body and Soul, is one of those rare books that should be on bookshelves in every Jewish home. It really lives up to its subtitle, The Torah Path to Health, Fitness, and a Holy Life. And I also just want to add that this book is replete with Torah wisdom from Chazal, as well as modern-day Talmidei Chachamim about healthy living, in addition to medical facts. However, the way you've presented the material is accessible, user-friendly, and even fun. It doesn't read like a dry academic journal, thankfully. So I'm wondering if you can just summarize for us, what is your goal for readers to bring what you've written in these pages to our daily lives? What's the takeaway?
You know, my initial impetus in writing this book was to try to help Jewish people and anyone for that matter be healthier. But the more I learned about it, myself, this is going back 10 years of research and testing the material, writing the material, rewriting the material hundreds of times, I realized that this is not just about health. It's really about holiness. And that's why that's part of the title. In fact, I think that maybe we miswrote the title, because the subtitle, as you just quoted it, is The Torah Path to Health, Fitness, and a Holy Life. And that the way that's written, it sounds like, well, if you want to have a healthy, fit, and holy life, here's the Torah path. And I think it really should be titled The Torah Path of Health, Fitness, and a Holy Life, because it seems to me, my understanding, and the Gedolim that are quoted in the book say this is the Torah path. It's not like it's an optional path. This really is the central Torah path that we learn to have the proper relationship to our bodies. Part of that, what that means is taking care of them. Yes, it's much of our health is within our control, and that we accept that and we make the efforts we need to make. And that is actually central. So for my readers, I hope is that they'll be inspired to wake up every morning and say, yes, this is my Torah path, is living a healthy life in all the different ways that can be applied.
That's so nice. Thank you for that. Some of the topics that you write about include how to achieve a healthy weight in chapter 11 and special Jewish food challenges, chapter 12. I'd like to talk a little bit about chapter 13, and that's fasting. In this chapter, you delve into a topic that is trendy but not new, intermittent fasting. And on page 161, you explain four types of intermittent fasting. So for listeners who might not be familiar with intermittent fasting, how do you explain what it is on a basic level as well as its overall benefits?
Well, it's interesting that you pinpoint that topic in the book because it's the epitome of what this whole book is about. What we learn when we learn the Torah of the body is that it coincides 100% with what the medical advice is about the body. It's not an accident, Heather. It's not random coincidence that the first instance of a mitzvah in the Torah. You know, I've asked this question. You go to your average Orthodox synagogue or group of Jews who are learned people and say to them, where's the first mitzvah in the Torah, the actual time the Torah used the word mitzvah? In my informal polling, 8 out of 10 cannot answer that question. And it's fascinating because we know from Chazal that the first instance of an idea is the key to understanding that idea. So look, it's actually not the mitzvah of pururvu, of having children. Torah doesn't use the word mitzvah there. Although we understand from the Rambam, that's considered one of the Tariq mitzvahs. The first use of the word mitzvah is by the Eitz Hadas, that by Adam HaRishon is told in the Garden of Eden, in Gan Eden, don't eat from this tree. That's where the Torah uses the word mitzvah. In other words, the whole concept of mitzvah is being taught around eating and self-control around eating. What you may eat and should eat and what you should refrain from. And what fasting is a period of refraining from eating. That's what it is. And by the way, Jews don't have a monopoly on fasting. Many religious traditions understand that fasting has spiritual benefits. And that's why we have 6 fast days on our calendar. What is the spiritual benefit of fasting? Then I'm going to go switch, you know, answer your question about the medical benefits. But understand there's a spiritual benefit to refraining, even though I might be hungry. We all know this from Yom Kippur. Like, we all do it on Yom Kippur. The Jews I know who are would not call themselves religious at all still fast on Yom Kippur. It's extremely widespread custom. We all can do it. 25 hours of no food or drink. So we know it's possible. So we know that that hunger signal doesn't mean I'm required to eat. And that's exactly what a fast is supposed to teach us. That signal is information. It's good information, but it's not that you're starving. You know it's not true. You could go days without eating and you won't die. Maybe weeks, as long as you drink water. So fasting on a spiritual level is an exercise in self-control. And it's very, very powerful. And it's a way of saying to yourself, just because I'm hungry, I don't have to eat all the time. Now, medically, it has tremendous benefits if it's done in the right way. And by the way, anything I say on this interview and I was saying in the book is not medical guidance. Everyone has to speak to their own doctor or medical practitioner to find out what they should do and whether or not fasting or intermittent fasting is safe for them.
Got it.
Please do not follow this advice without speaking to your own professional. But that said, intermittent fasting, which is basically not eating the 3 traditional meals a day, that's what it means, okay? It means maybe for some people not eating breakfast and their first meal of the day is not till lunch. The window of eating is now, rather than being from 8 a.m. until 8 p.m., which is 12 hours, you're reducing it, say, from 12 noon to 8 p.m. So now you reduce it to 8 hours window of eating. And then the rest of the day, meaning the remaining 16 hours, you're now not eating. That's one form of intermittent fasting. What are the benefits of going longer periods of time without eating? In addition to the spiritual benefits of that self-mastery, that self-control, there are medical benefits that we list there on page 161. It can help reduce your blood pressure. It can help with your insulin problems for people who are diabetic or pre-diabetic. It reduces tension and fatigue. It can reduce for cancer patients, side effects from chemotherapy. It improves cholesterol. It helps with cancer, fighting cancer in other ways because it starves cancer cells. There's tremendous benefits physically to this kind of fasting. The example I gave you of an 8-hour eating window, that's just one type of intermittent fasting. There's other types of intermittent fasting where someone will do highly restricted calories one day a week or 2 days a week. And when a person gets in this habit, it's extremely liberating in many ways. And I'll just tell you from personal example, I now don't use me as your role model necessarily, but I stopped eating breakfast. And I would start my first meal of the day at noon. I started making it later and later until it was 2 p.m., 3 p.m. And now I basically don't eat until dinner time. but you have to understand something. That dinner time is really fantastic. It's a delicious, healthy, wonderful, exuberant meal that I eat. And I'm not fasting from water. That's key to intermittent fasting. If you want to try this, make sure you drink water all day long. Stay well hydrated. Even coffee is okay, black coffee. The key is you're not consuming calories. And there's much more to say about it. This is not a medical discussion per se, but many people have tried this and it's very consistent. There's many gadolim who have practiced this without even knowing it was called intermittent fasting. We mentioned some of them in the book.
Right, yes. And also just to reiterate that the process where you've gotten yourself so that it's a great healthy dinner and that's basically it. So it is a process. You didn't just start that overnight, even for you who've
said
that.
No. Okay. And by the way, I'm glad you mentioned that, Heather, because when I first considered this project, this book and all the other, I spoke to one of my Rebbeim, Rabbi Yitzchak Berkowitz Shlita in Yerushalayim about it. I asked him if I should do this. He said, you should do it, but make sure that you don't make it too hard, because if you make it too hard, people are not going to do it. So we've made this so easy, little baby step. If you follow this book, I'll say on the record, if this book doesn't help you, I'll give you your money back.
Oh my, well.
I mean, I'm not profiting from the book. The book sales are funding the program, but I'm so confident that it'll help you because we've made it so accessible.
Okay, we've recorded that. Okay, that's a first for 613 Books Podcast. No problem. Okay, so let's talk about the topic of sleep from Body and Soul. There are a variety of reasons or excuses why people are not getting an adequate amount of sleep. And of course, we want to feel wide awake during our waking hours. And no one likes going through the day overtired. It could be we're just not fully aware of the risks that come with inadequate sleep. And I noticed in Body and Soul that starting on page 233, you list plenty of risks to our health. Many are quite serious regarding inadequate sleep. And one of the Torah-based remedies that you write about is the power nap. And that has roots in Talmud and Shulchan Aruch. So tell us a bit about the benefits and limitations of the power nap.
I'm glad you mentioned the benefits of sleep in general. Part of the problem is this technology world we live in. We have too many screens and beeps and whistles in our pockets, in our homes, that distract us and keep us from going to bed on time. And we all have that risk. And we have to recognize that this is a problem. In fact, the Gemara says that nighttime was created for sleep. The Talmud says this. Well, let's go to sleep at night when we should. We have artificial lighting and we have lit up phones that give us all kinds of juicy information, and we have a hard time going to sleep when we should be. So what you're asking about, a power nap, theoretically, one shouldn't need to have if one is getting adequate night's sleep. But that said, power napping is extremely important. I quote Dale Carnegie, a non-Jewish authority, that in his estimate, a half-hour power nap can compensate for losing an hour of sleep at night. So you're actually gaining. Here's the key. The key to a good power nap, this is what the Gemara says. The Gemara says it's important if you need to take a nap in the afternoon, take one, but don't make it too long. And if anybody's listening wants to try a power nap, I can just tell you from personal experience how you can do it. The wonderful thing about your body, including your brain, is it's highly trainable. Some people will tell me, if I take a nap in the afternoon, I end up waking up very groggy. Well, that's because you haven't trained your body to do it. The way you train your body to do it is simply pick a time of day when it works with your schedule to take such a nap. Let's say it's 4 in the afternoon or 5 p.m., somewhere around then. Let's just say. So that time of day, set an alarm for 20 minutes or maximum 30 minutes and make sure you wake up at that time. What will happen is if after about 4 days of napping and waking up with that alarm, you won't need the alarm anymore and your nap will become extremely refreshing and you'll wake up feeling so great and so energized for the rest of the day.
Oh, wow. That's incredible. I might try that. Bli neder. That's a really interesting set of facts there. Another crucial topic from Body and Soul is helping our children develop and maintain healthy habits. And you don't shy away from real-world topics and temptations that directly affect the health of our children and teens these days, which is certainly worthwhile reading. Likewise, for at least the past 100 years, parents are tempted to use sugary treats as rewards for their kids. So I'm wondering if you could tell us about that handy chart on page 271, which can give families a realistic look at the sugar culture at home and elsewhere.
Well, that chart sort of assumes that the reader has already read chapter 4. Because if the reader hasn't read chapter 4 already, that chart may not make a lot of sense. Chapter 4 is all about sugar. It is the Torah and medical knowledge we have about sugar. If a person doesn't have that knowledge, then they may react by saying, "So yeah, I give my kids treats, so what's wrong with it?" And by the way, I am not here to ban sugar. I'm not here to tell people not to give your kids treats, per se. You know, a cookie or a piece of cake does not necessarily, and it depends on the context, unhealthy. But I am here to ban, by the way, soda, liquid sugar. And chapter 4 explains why. And many parents I see and I meet and I speak to have no idea of how harmful liquid sugar can be, not only to the children, but to adults, to everybody, and to children especially so, because they're growing and they're developing lifelong habits. So if a person is not on that bandwagon already and understands that excess added sugar, especially liquid sugar, are harmful, then this chart on page 271 is not as meaningful. It's still meaningful because I think we can recognize that I would want my child, if I'm a parent or if I'm a teacher, I'd want my child to be motivated by the intrinsic reward, the joy of learning, the joy of being a good person, as opposed to the extrinsic reward of some treat. I would think we would all agree to that in principle. So then that chart does make sense because that's asking you to self-assess. How much are we, our family, using extrinsic rewards as opposed to intrinsic rewards? Because most children are highly motivated when you praise them for their work and you show them how they've learned and they feel good about that and they don't necessarily need the sugar, but we kind of get into that habit of using those treats.
Right.
And I would just like to add one last thing is this applies to you and me more than to the children, because the children, as we all know, their best way to teach children is through example. So when we as parents and teachers live on a higher level in terms of these issues and we avoid these things in our own lives, our kids are going to emulate us. That's not all we have to do. There's a lot more, as you saw in that chapter. But the first step is to self-assess. Where am I in this? And am I creating the right environment in my home that's going to be nurturing healthy habits?
I hear. Thank you. I can't leave my audience and our listeners dangling because you are issuing a ban on sugary drinks. So I just want to speak on behalf of families who pretty much relegate, let's say we relegate colas and other sugary drinks to Shabbos, right? If people do make a concerted effort to at least limit it, or if there are people out there that say, listen, it helps me learn if I have my can of Coke next to me, or, you know, not to make commercials here, but, you know, once they're in the habit, it's really hard habit to break. Must it be extreme that people should just do their best and just cut it out of their diet, sugary drinks and colas and things? Or, you know, is there a middle ground? Just realistically speaking, for people who might just want it, Shabbos, Yom Tov, or once a day, whatever.
As you said, every habits are hard to break.
Yes.
And smoking is a good example. If I asked you that same question about smoking, what would you say? Would you say, well, you know, I only smoke once a week? You would probably say, well, long term, you want to reduce that, right? You probably want to try to cut down. You know, we have wisdom in the book of how to change a habit. The most successful way to change a habit is not to go cold turkey. That's probably going to backfire. You change a habit by reducing. But I had this conversation just the other day. I was at a chasana with, you know, where you see a lot of people from the community and that you don't necessarily see every day. And I saw a certain rabbi I know who I believe he's healthy. I mean, I believe he exercises. I believe he eats healthy. He's thin. And I saw him drinking a whole glass of Coke, a whole big glass of it. So we had this conversation right then about that. I'm not shy about it because I'm in this. I will broach this with anybody. And I do it from a point of caring. Yes. You know, I'm not here to criticize. I'm like, are you aware of what sugar in that form, in too much quantity, does to your liver? So I explained to him. And he said to me, what you said, Heather, basically said, isn't just a matter of moderation. I said, well, yes, it depends on how you define that. If you define moderation as, you know, one small, let's say in a standard drinking cup, a 6 ounce or 8 ounce cup, if you're talking about a half an inch of soda, okay, that I would agree with you. That's moderation. If you define moderation as a full cup once, twice, three times a week, that's not moderation. Is here the difference? Mm-hmm. And by the way, your listeners should know, this is not just about Coke. Liquid fructose includes orange juice and apple juice and grape juice. I hate to say it, but to your liver, those are exactly the same as Coca-Cola. And so my own family, I'll be an example. We allow our children to have sweet apple juice on Shabbos, but they get a tiny shot glass of it. That's what they get. You know, a regular shot glass. That's their l'chaim on Shabbos is apple juice. I don't think that that's dangerous in that small amount. And it's wonderful. They don't get a whole glass of it. And we're teaching them how to enjoy it in small quantities.
I hear. It's a lot of fascinating information you've given over to us. And you've told us what the goal of the book is. For somebody who might feel a bit overwhelmed, but they really do want to just turn over a new leaf, get healthy. Hopefully it's not because of a health scare, but just, you know, that effort that people want to make. You mentioned something about baby steps, but when people go through the book and want to apply, and you have definitely a lot of recommendations from some very big thinkers in the Jewish world who write, for example, Rabbi Akiva Tatz, that he's applied some of the lessons and wisdom that you give from the book in his own life. So people who want to really take this on, is there some sort of sentence or some sort of encouragement they can keep in their mind as they're trying to go this route of a healthy and holy life?
It's a funny question because it makes me want to say the right mantra is in the eye of the beholder. Some people are more motivated by fear. And so on the back cover, we put a quote from Midrash Rabbah, which shocks people. 99% of illness is due to people neglecting their health.
Yeah.
For me personally, that helps. Like, wow. Like, I don't want to get sick. I don't like being sick. I don't like getting a cold. I don't like getting a flu. And it's true. Doesn't mean you're guaranteed not to get sick, but you will reduce the chance of getting sick drastically if you follow the right steps in life, including what you mentioned before, Heather, sleep. Sleep is really important. Yes. And all these other things, avoiding dangers and so on. So many people, that quote is key. For other people, I would suggest that they keep by their side, you know, put on the refrigerator, the quote we have inside the flap from the Mishnah Berurah. The soul enjoys the spirituality of the food and the body enjoys the physicality of the food. Mm. And from this power, they are joined by the food.
That's awesome.
That's a great quote for your fridge, I think. Maybe one more from Rabbi Hirsch, which is also on the inside flap. We put, it's for me, a very, very, very big quote. So important, I put it actually in the introduction of the book. Rav Hirsch says that a person can only reach his fullest spiritual potential if he is physically strong. So if a person's physically weak because they've neglected their health, because they've not exercised, or they've done other things to harm their health and they become weak, and that happens to a lot of people in old age, and you know that's true. You see people who have a hard time walking or can't even walk at all. They have to be pushed in a wheelchair, or worse, in a nursing home. Many, many of those examples were avoidable had they taken care of their health. And you know that when a person's sick and they're in the hospital, chas v'shalom, that they can't do a lot of mitzvahs, a lot of things they want to do when they're sick, even if they're not in the hospital, just sick in bed at home. So understand from, Gedolim have told us, Rav Hirsch has told us, if you want to reach your fullest potential, focus on being strong and healthy. That should be motivating you every single day.
Wow, amazing. It's really one of the best books that I read in the past year. And I love the tone of the book. You and Dr. Grove are really on our side. You can tell that in the words of all the pages. So I appreciate that. And Rabbi Seinfeld, I just want to thank you so much for joining me on 613 Books Podcast and talking about your book, Body and Soul.
It has been a great pleasure and honor to be here. And I appreciate your kind words about the book very much. It gives me chizuk because I need it. It's a hard path I've chosen to walk. Listeners who would like to follow me and be encouraged on a weekly basis, recently I launched a Torah Anytime Shir class. It's only about 10 minutes at each session and little nuggets from the book that I'm teaching over. And it's about twice a week. I made it about 10 minutes long so that you could listen to while you're driving to the grocery store or somewhere else. So easy to listen to. So far, I have about 10 or 11 episodes of that. And I hopefully will keep that going. So that may be a way for people also to get that ongoing engagement and motivation.
That's so good to know. I appreciate that you mentioned that. You know what else will happen is people will listen to it on the way to the grocery store and change their list for the better.
God willing.
Okay. Thank you again, Rabbi Alexander Seinfeld.
I always like to end by saying, may you and everyone listening be gesund.
Amen. Amen. Rabbi Seinfeld's Table Talk blog goes out via email subscription, and there is a link in the show notes of this episode, which you can sign up to receive every week. You will also see the email address to contact Rabbi Seinfeld, as well as links to purchase your copy of Body and Soul. It's all there for you in the show notes. And that's what's on the shelf for this week's episode of 613 Books Podcast. I'm Heather Dean. Thanks for listening.
613 Books Podcast is produced and hosted by Heather Dean. Senior producer and director of operations, Greg Cohen. Consulting producer, Yisca Roth. Show announcer, Michael Doniger. Remember to like and subscribe to our show on your favorite app, whether it's Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, or your own preferred app, and never miss an episode. You can find all episodes of 613 Books Podcast by visiting our website, heatherdeanproductions.com.